getting anything I want to put up on the website necessarily, but you never know what will happen. Never know what the Lord will do. But in talking about, you know, Gog and Magog, that final battle, you know, there's a transition from that final battle to the great white throne judgment in Revelation 20, and I want you to hear this out. Alright. I want you to see some comparisons. It took me a long time to find out here in Ezekiel what was figurative and what was not, because it seems like we're talking about some literal things. And there's a wealth of information of things we've yet to learn that go from Ezekiel 40 through 47 concerning what happens after the Great White Throne Judgment and in the new heaven and the new earth. I want to read a little bit from Revelation 20 through 21. It says, when the 1,000 years are ended, verse 7, Satan will be released from his prison, and he'll go out to deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog. Now, remember just for a little bit background, when we're talking about Gog and Magog, we are definitely talking about what is represented as the nations that are apart from the Semites, which Israel came through. And while we're not trying to be literal that all of these are not Semites, in other words, that none of them come from Sem when we talk about the nations, we're talking about originally the nations that were apart from the Semites, and they are representative of all the nations outside of Israel. The Semites are, you know, Semitic peoples are usually associated with Israel. All the rest are considered the children of Ham and Japheth because they are outside of that primacy. So Gog and Magog, we can see from the Table of Nations in Genesis chapter 10, that Gog and Magog have to do with the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and so forth. And all of those mentioned in Ezekiel 38 and 39, they're all... they come from the table, straight out of the Table of Nations, as the children of Ham and Japheth. And so Ham and Japheth are a representation as the roots of all of the Gentile nations. The roots of all of the Gentile nations, and that's what you've got to keep considering. All right? And it says that at the end here, after the 1,000 years are over, the 1,000-year reign of Christ, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog. So the way, I want you to see that the way Gog and Magog is being used here is a representation of the nations, and it takes this name directly from the Table of Nations in Genesis chapter 10. They marched across the breadth of the earth and surrounded the camp of God's people, which is Jerusalem, the city he loves. But fire came down from heaven and devoured them, and the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of burning sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet had been thrown, and they'll be tormented day and night forever and ever. Now, this lets you know that the lake of fire is something that's eternal, and that there will be eternal suffering, all right? But look at the way this is written. But fire came down from heaven and devoured them, and the devil who deceived them, that's the peoples of Gog and Magog, was thrown into the lake of burning sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet had been thrown. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Then I saw a great white throne, and him who was seated on it, and earth and sky fled from his presence. There was no place for them. I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and the books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the books. The sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and hell gave up the dead that were in them, and each person was judged according to what he had done. Then death and hell were thrown into the lake of fire. The lake of fire is the second death. If anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. And he'll wipe away every tear from their eyes. And there'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And when we talk about the old order of the things, we're talking about the spiritual. I mean the physical. There is no more death. Now, this is necessarily so because, see, the nature of the physical, and you've got to be able to reason this out in your head, all right? The nature of the physical is temporary. We're not talking about God expanding the temporary so that it becomes eternal. We're talking about him changing the nature of it so that it is eternal. In other words, it's not going to be like Adam and Eve. Remember, Adam and Eve existed in dependence upon God, renewing them day by day. We've talked about this before. That's the way that they would be perpetually living, only because they were dependent upon God to renew them day by day. We talked about that picture of the fruit being in the tree. As long as the fruit remains in the tree, it is renewed. But when the tree flings its fruit, then it begins to corrupt. And we see this happen with Adam and Eve. When they were thrown out of the garden, they began to corrupt. Right? And this whole point of the new heaven and the new earth is there'll be no more death. No more crying, no more tears. That means no more physical. And that's necessarily so. And that's what it means by the old order of things has passed away. Now, can everybody see that? Can everybody see that? So when we're talking about the new heaven and the new earth, we're talking about the same picture that's pictured in your body, where your body is resurrected and transformed into like Jesus' glorious body. What is sown in corruption is raised in glory. What is sown in dishonor is raised in honor. What is sown temporary is raised eternal. In the same way, when this heaven and earth are destroyed, there's a new heaven and a new earth. Because heaven and earth picture that body and spirit. In other words, they become spiritual. The nature of heaven and earth is changed from this physical heavens and earth, this atmosphere of heaven that surrounds this earth, these two firmaments, they are changed to become forever. Right? The old order of things has passed away. Right? All things are new. He was seated on the throne, said, I'm making everything new. Now, I want you to notice a comparison here. Behold, all things have passed away, all things have become new. Right? A new creation in Christ. Well, compare that to this phrase here. He'll wipe away every tear from their eyes, verse 4. And there'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And he was seated on the throne and said, I am making everything new. You see that? It's the same exact phrasing, isn't it? The idea of the new creation is to make it eternal. The idea of this creation is to be eternal. So we must understand this as a precept to build upon in understanding the new heavens and the earth. It is spiritual. It is eternal and therefore spiritual. It is transformed from the physical to the spiritual. Can everybody see that? In the same way that your body is, in the same way that your body and spirit become a new soul through Jesus' death and resurrection. Through Jesus' death and resurrection, he has reconciled all things. In the same way, this creation becomes spiritual. The creation itself, as it says in Romans 8, is delivered from its bondage to decay. Anything that remained physical would still be subject to decay, is the point. Will this new heaven and new earth be subject to decay? No. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There'll be no more death, no more mourning or crying or pain. It's eternal. He said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To he who is thirsty, I will give to drink without cost the spring of the water of life. He overcomes will inherit all of this, and I'll be his God, and he will be my son. But the cowardly, unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, who practice magic, the idolaters, all liars, their place will be in the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death. All right. When he goes on, verse 32, it says this. After describing the foundations of the city of Jerusalem, we want to deal specifically with the temple, right? Because that's where we're going in Ezekiel. Verse 22 in chapter 21 says, I did not see a temple in the city, because the Lord God Almighty, the Lamb, are its temple. I want you to hear this now. I did not see a temple in the city, because the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city does not need the sun or the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and the Lamb is its lamp. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their splendor into it. On no day will its gates ever be shut, for there will be no night there. The glory and honor of the nations will be brought into it. Nothing impure will ever enter it, nor will anyone who does what is shameful or deceitful, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. In other words, again, we see the point to the eternal. Now remember, so the temple is not a literal building any more than the city of Jerusalem is. The city of Jerusalem is its people, therefore the temple is our God. Let me say that again. The city of Jerusalem is the people set down as a bride adorned for her husband, right, on the new earth. And the temple is our God. And this is, see, this gives meaning where it says, now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. Get it? The temple that's in the midst of the city is God. I did not see a temple in the city, because the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. Now, this is a great understanding. Now, if we will... Now, it gives, you know, and it talks about the river of life in chapter 22. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. And on each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be any curse. The throne of God and the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads, and there will be no more night. They will not need the light of a lamp or a light or the sun, for the Lord their God will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. Now, this is the nature of it. See, the throne of God and the Lamb, that is the temple in the midst of the city. Everybody can see that, right? So when we go back here, I want you to see something. At the end of the story of Gog and Magog, where he says, on that day, verse 11, chapter 39, I will give Gog a burial place in Israel, in the valley of those who travel east towards the sea. And it will block the way of the travelers, because Gog and all of his hordes will be buried there. So it will be called the Valley of Ham and Gog. For 7 months the house of Israel will be burying them in order to cleanse the land, and all the people of the land will bury them on the day I am glorified. The day I am glorified will be a memorable day for them, declares the Lord. Now, what day are we talking about? We're talking about the day of the Lord, which is the thousand-year reign of Christ. Here we are talking specifically the end of that day, but it is the day in which the Lord is glorified. All right, so we know that 7 months the house of Israel will be burying them occurs within the day of the Lord. Men will be regularly employed to cleanse the land. Some will go out through the land in addition to them. Others will bury those that remain on the ground. And at the end of the 7 months, they will begin their search. And they will go through the land, and one of them sees a human bone. He will set up a marker beside it until the grave diggers have buried it in the Valley of Ham and Gog. Also, a town called Hamona will be there. And so they will cleanse the land. Son of man, this is what the sovereign Lord says. And I don't want to get into all the figuratism of this, but you see, the reason that every bone will be buried from what is left of the nations, is the idea of them being cleansed from the earth. It's the idea of sin being cleansed from the earth. Can y'all see that? It's the idea of them being shut away in the same way that everything that offends is thrown into the lake of fire. These people searching out the land and finding these bones and putting a marker beside it is very much like the angels removing everything that offends. Right? Tying the wood together, in, as it says in that parable, tying the wood together in bundles and throwing it into the fire. And Son of Man, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, call out to every kind of bird and all the wild animals to send them to come all for the sacrifice I'm preparing for you, the great sacrifice on the mountains of Israel. There you will eat flesh and drink blood, and you will eat the flesh of mighty men and drink the blood of princes of the earth, as they were rams and lambs, goats and bulls. And he says, I will display my glory, verse 21, among the nations, and all the nations will see the punishment I inflict and the hand I lay upon them. From that day forward, the house of Israel will know that I am the Lord their God, and the nations will know that the people of Israel went into exile for their sin because they were unfaithful to me. So I hid my face from them and handed them over to their enemies, and they all fell by the sword. I have dealt with them according to their uncleanness and their offenses, and I hid my face from them. And this is what the Sovereign Lord says, I will now bring Jacob back from captivity and will have compassion on all the people of Israel. Now, the idea of bringing Jacob back from captivity is the idea of the resurrection, because the captivity is death. You see that? This is what's displayed throughout the millennium. Because the Israel of the physical is a picture of the body. And the Israel of the spiritual is the spirit. And the idea of bringing Jacob back to the land is to bring him back to the land of the living. In other words, to bring the physical back. But to change it. Right? And this is what's demonstrated in the millennium about God ruling from Israel. About Jesus ruling from Israel. But we will talk about that more later. And then he goes on how he will no longer hide his face from Israel. Then we talk about the new temple area in the 25th year of our exile. At the beginning of the year, on the 10th of the month, in the 14th year after the fall of the city, on that very day the hand of the Lord was upon me and took me there. In visions of God, he took me to the land of Israel and set me in a very high mountain, on whose south side were some buildings that looked like a city. And he took me there, and I saw a man whose appearance was like bronze, and he was standing in the gateway with a linen cord and measuring rod in his hand. Thus the man said to me, Son of man, look with your eyes and heart, with your ears, and pay attention to everything I'm going to show you, for this is why you've been brought here. Tell the house of Israel everything you see. I saw a wall completely surrounding the temple area. The length of the measuring rod in the man's hand was 6-foot-long cubits, and each was a cubit. Now we're talking specifically about building a new temple here. He went to the gate facing the east and climbed the steps and measured the threshold of the gate, and gives the measurements there. And then he measured the portico, and inside the east gate were 3 alcoves. Now, all of this seems to be very, very physical if you look at it. We talk about the outer court, the north gate, the south gate, the gates to the inner court, the rooms for preparing sacrifices, the rooms for the priests. All of this is talking about a new temple. And he talks about this temple. But when we get all the way in talking about all of this, and in chapter 43, we talk about the glory of God returning to the temple. And believe me, there's a lot of things I want to get in here, but I want to jump ahead. We talk about the priesthood that will serve at the temple. We talk about the division of the land, right? And then, all of a sudden, when we talk about the same river flowing from the temple. Now, I want you to make a comparison. Remember what we just read in Revelation 20:22 about the river. What did we say the temple was? We said the temple was God, the throne of God and of the Lamb. And this river flowed. It says the city doesn't need a temple because God is its temple. In the same way that the city doesn't need buildings because we are its buildings. Everybody got that, right? So when we talk about, look, I want to read you this phrase again from chapter 22 about how this river flows out from the throne of the Lamb and the throne of God, which is what? The temple. Right? The angel showed me the river of water of life as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and from the Lamb down the middle of the street, great street of the city. And what is the city? It is Jerusalem, right? It is us, the new Jerusalem, set down as a bride adorned for a husband. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Remember that phrase. Now this river of water of life goes directly from the throne of God and the Lamb, which is the temple in the midst of the city. Listen to this. In chapter 47, the man brought me back to the entrance of the temple, and I saw water coming out from under the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the temple faced east, and the water was coming down from under the south side of the temple, south of the altar, and he brought me out through the north gate and led me around the outside of the outer gate facing east, and the water was flowing from the south side. As the man went eastward, and a measuring line in his hand, he measured off 1,000 cubits and led me through water that was ankle deep. He measured off 1,000 cubits and led me through water that was knee-deep. He measured off 1,000 and led me through water that was up to my waist. He measured up 1,000, that was a river that I could not cross because the water had risen and was deep enough to swim in, the river that no one could cross. And he asked me, "Son of man, do you see this?" Then he led me back to the bank of the river, and when I arrived there, I saw a great number of trees on each side of the river. And he said, this river flows from the eastern region and goes down into the Arabah, where it enters the sea, where it empties into the sea. The water there becomes fresh, swarms of living creatures that live wherever the river flows. There'll be large numbers of fish because the water flows there and makes the salt water fresh. So that the river flows, everything will live. Get it? The river, the water of life. That's the whole point. Fishermen will stand along the shore from Engedi to the En-Eglim, and there'll be places for spreading nets. See, you see now how all this is really figurative and not literal. The fish then will be many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. Remember, it's for the healing of the nations. The fish, the nations. But the swamps and the marshes will not become fresh. They will be left for salt. Fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor will their fruit fail. Every month they will bear, because the water from the sanctuary flows to them, and their fruit will serve for food, and their leaves for healing. So you see, the point is, don't miss the big point. You can see the connection here. I mean, in both places, we go immediately from Gog and Magog, right? Which ends one order of things. Then we see the great white throne judgment. Then we see the new creation, with Jerusalem set down and a new temple built. In Ezekiel, we go straight from that destruction of Gog and Magog to this new temple being built. And the description of the temple ends in the same way as it does in Revelation 22, with this river of life that flows from the throne of God and the Lamb, which is the temple, according to Revelation 22. That is the temple. Revelation 21, that is the temple. There's no temple there because God and Jesus are the temple. This river of life flows from their throne. And so when it says it flows from the temple here, it's saying it's flowing from the throne of God. So the point is, and you can see, you know, the fruit trees on both sides and their fruit and their leaves for the healing of the nations, it's the same thing here. Right? Just a lot more detail in Ezekiel, like there was with Gog and Magog. There's a lot more detail here. And the reason thus being is because there is a description here in this temple and all of its furnishings and the way that it's built. It's a description about God and the Lamb. It's a description about God and Jesus. And if you can understand how to relate all of these measurements and these porticos and, I mean, and these, how many cubits or what, if you can get the understanding of this, which must come by revelation, then you're going to know something about God that nobody knows. Because the temple Ezekiel talking about isn't a temple of brick and stone and mortar, even though that's the figure he uses. It's about God. Can y'all see what I'm getting at? This temple in Ezekiel 40 through 47, seven chapters, to tell you about God. Things that have to be revealed. Things that yet to be revealed. The picture of this temple and the way it's built, it seems to be a very literal thing. But this is where, this is why it is so literal, because it is very specific about things that have to do with who God is and who Jesus is and the whole point of everything. There is so much right here in these seven chapters that only God will ever be able to reveal. It's hidden. Can y'all get it? But can you see it? Ezekiel is not talking about a building here. He's talking about God himself. He's talking about Jesus. And he's talking about their thrones. And he's talking about it being set in the midst of the city that is us. Can y'all see it? That's a good place to stop. I just hit the high point.